What I'm presenting today is data collected as part of my dissertation at North Carolina State University. I'd like to begin with a little bit of an introduction of the virus I work with. PRRS is the acronym for Porcine Reproductive and Respiratory Syndrome. This disease is an economically important disease of swine, and it's present at the global level. The disease was first described in North Carolina in 1987, and it was described as, it was called the mystery swine disease. In 1991, the agent was identified as a positive sense single-stranded RNA virus. Positive sense just means that the viral RNA can be directly translated into protein, just like messenger RNA. And as many RNA viruses, PRRS has a high mutation rate, and that makes it very difficult to control or to have vaccines that are effective against it. The clinical signs of the disease vary by age. In adult females, there's reproductive failure, poor conception rate, low conception rate, late-term abortions. In boars, there's semen changes. There's very high mortality in neonates. In also nursery pigs just fail to thrive. Growing and finishing pigs develop pneumonia as a result of the virus multiplying in the lung macrophage cells. And the pigs just really don't do well. Because the pigs are unhealthy, there's a very high rate of secondary infections, especially porcine circovirus. Transmission occurs mainly from contact with infected pigs. Although the virus is cleared from the bloodstream of the animals after about 3 weeks, the virus is persistent and is shed in saliva and feces. So pigs bite each other a lot, and that's one way that the virus is transmitted, through the saliva into the blood. Also through artificial insemination, through when semen is contaminated, and just general overall activities on the farm can contaminate the pigs, movement of personnel, things like that. The virus has poor environmental resistance. It's very susceptible to desiccation, elevated temperature, and also to UV rays. Aerosol transmission has been suspected because sometimes people just cannot find the source of the contamination. Well, as entomologists, sometimes we know that what appears to go through the air sometimes gets a little bit of help. And so studies done at the University of Minnesota have shown that mosquitoes and houseflies were able to mechanically transmit PRRS virus. What they did with both species, they fed flies on a viremic pig, a pig that was infected, and they interrupted the feeding, then transferred the flies onto naive pigs to resume feeding, and were able to transmit the virus to the pigs that way. The picture here shows that because houseflies cannot pierce the skin, what they did is they scarified the skin of the pigs with sandpaper, and that's how houseflies were able to get virus from an infected pig. We looked at stable flies as potential vectors because, well, they're blood feeders. They feed about twice a day, and both males and females bite. Their bite is painful, and that causes the host to have defensive behaviors that dislodge the insect. And when there's many animals together, the insect can land on a different animal to complete the blood meal, and that's very conducive to pathogen transmission. The flies are present in North Carolina almost year-round. As soon as the temperature reaches about 60 degrees Fahrenheit, they're active and biting. They are attracted to pigs as hosts, and we also had evidence, and I guess this is part of the key point, we had evidence that the virus was isolated from stable flies in a PRRS outbreak in Texas. There are many barriers to infection in insects, and those barriers affect their ability to transmit pathogens. In the mouth parts, for mechanical transmission, the fly needs to have, or the mouth parts need to have a large enough volume to transfer an infective dose to the host. in the midgut, the environment of the midgut, either the physical barriers such as the paratrophic membrane or the gut enzymes, so chemical barriers, can affect the pathogen and can degrade it. If somehow the pathogen can go through into the hemolymph, then it has to evade the immune response of the insect. And then it has to exit the insect, usually through the salivary glands. So it has to enter the glands and then more importantly, exit the glands to get transferred back to the host through feeding. So we looked at the potential of the stable flies to actually transmit this virus. I had two experiments for transmission. In both cases, we fed stable flies on active virus, which was a modified vaccine, or on a blood solution that contained no virus. That was our negative control. Then we fed the flies after a full blood meal on that infective dose. We transferred those flies to naive pigs 12, 24, 36, and 48 hours so that they could take another full blood meal. We had 20 flies per pigs, and we had two pigs per time interval. We did a second experiment where we interrupted the feeding. So when the flies were feeding on that viremic source, they were interrupted and then transferred to the naive pigs 3, 6, or 12 hours after being interrupted in feeding. In that second experiment, we did the analysis looking at the virus separately in the head, so looking at the mouth parts, and in the gut, looking at the blood meal. We detected the virus using cell culture, so virus isolation. That's a technique where the virus is grown on a cell culture and then detected using fluorescence labeled antibodies. This technique can detect only replicating virus, so virus that is biologically active. We also used real-time reverse transcriptase PCR. We used a standard curve for the quantification of the virus. This technique detects a specific genetic sequence of the virus, and it's not indicative of any kind of biological activity. Well, we were not able to transmit the virus to pigs under the conditions of either of our experiments. All groups of flies that were used, though, were positive for active virus, so virus that did grow on cell culture. And we were only able to get active virus in the mouth parts of the stable fly immediately after feeding, so at time zero, flies that didn't actually feed on the pig, just as a control to make sure that the virus was there. That's the only time we found active virus in the mouth parts. In very small amounts, we had to go through two passages on cell culture before it was detectable. The mouth parts of stable flies, the mouth parts of stable flies are very small, and we estimated that with the experiments that we had, we only had about 400 virus particles that were possibly transferred to the pigs, a maximum of that. We want also to know what happens inside the gut. I'm speeding up here because I still have a lot to tell you about. We fed flies active virus, inactivated virus, and no virus, and then we sampled after feeding over 4 days, and we replicated the entire experiment twice. The flies were dissected, and we did virus isolation and PCR, and then looked at the persistence of the virus in the gut of the flies. In blue, there's active virus. In red, inactivated virus. The amount of virus that was detected decreased over time, and there was no difference between if the virus was active or not. There seems to be a midgut barrier, as the virus is actually actively degraded. But we wanted to know what would happen if we bypassed this barrier. So we did intrathoracic inoculation of the virus into the hemolymph of the flies. This technique is used to look at vector competence of mosquitoes, for example. So we injected the virus into the hemolymph, looked at it over 48 hours and also over 10 days. And over 48 hours, the virus did decrease but stabilized at a high level. So if we do an overlay with red, what is present in the gut, and in blue, what's present in the hemolymph, there's obviously not as much degradation of the virus. At 10 days, at the lower line in this table, the virus was still present in very high amounts. We do not know if the virus transfers into the salivary glands. That will be for another student to do, very exciting work. But we don't know. And in conclusion, stable fly mouthparts don't seem to carry enough virus to transmit by itself. The flies can harbor the virus, but it's degraded in the midgut. The degradation in the hemolymph is low, perhaps possibility to get into the salivary glands, we don't know. But the stable flies themselves don't seem to be an efficient vector of PRRS to transmit between pigs, but they can certainly disseminate the virus and contaminate the environment. Thank you.
We have time for a question or two.
Yes.
You used a live attenuated vaccine virus in this study, I think is what you said.
Yes. The question was that if I used a live attenuated virus and how it would be different if I had used a different virus. Definitely the amount of virus necessary to cause infection would be higher because it was an attenuated live vaccine virus with a hot strain, let's say, something that was a lot more virulent. There might have been a difference. I think mostly because the stable flies would deposit virus at the very top layers of the skin, though, I think a large amount of virus would be needed, even if it's a virulent strain.
Thank you, Jeff.
Thank you.